All right. Hello again and welcome to Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. The number, as always, to call is 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. I am Russ Salzberg along with my partner today, Paulie Dotz, Paul Dottino. And, hey, Paulie, here we are at 0-4 against 0-4. But it doesn't matter if it's 0-4 who you're facing or 4-0. You need a win by any means necessary.
Yeah. Which is exactly what Eli Manning said yesterday. Brandon Marshall, same thing. And everybody in that locker room is of the opinion that you can't even look at the big picture. Right now, you just have to get a win, because without a win, you can't build anything. So I get that. I get that. They're fortunate in that another team that is struggling as well, the 0-4 Chargers, are coming into MetLife Stadium on Sunday. It is obviously an eminently beatable team. There's no question about that. And from the Giants' perspective, that's exactly what
you're
the doctor ordered
to
right now.
The Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com.
Say something.
The show
about
will
that.
Begin
I don't
shortly.
Want to say we'll agree to disagree, because I get what you're saying. But you know what? You got a team coming in that is hungry and as desperate as you are. It's almost like you could be better off. It's 3-1 or 4-0. I'm serious.
Well,
it's a situation. You're going to have two hungry dogs in a street fight. That's exactly what it is.
One thing that will go in the Giants' favor, as small as it might be,
right. The
history of West Coast teams who come to the East Coast and have to play an early game
right. Is
not good. Because remember, it's a 1 o'clock kickoff at MetLife Stadium, which means body clock wise, it's 10 o'clock in the morning for the Chargers. Usually that does give West Coast teams some trouble to start the game, first quarter, first half. Giants need to jump on them early, which is something they have not done, by the way, Russ, all season long. They have been terrible offensively in the first half of games, specifically in the first quarter. If there's ever a game where they've got to jump out to a 10-0 lead, this is the game.
Oh, listen, I think they need, just so they can breathe easier and not start with, uh-oh, here we go again, we're behind the eight ball.
Right.
I couldn't agree with you more. Let's run through some our injury report here. Now, this is, we don't know if it's questionable, doubtful, or anything like that. We're just giving you a list, the fresh list, which we just received. Odell with the finger in the ankle. A dark core back, Jack Rabbit, Janoris Jenkins at ankle, Brandon Marshall toe, Paul Perkins ribs, JPP, a knee and a shoulder, Richburg the concussion and concussion protocol, I gather, and OV with the ankle. There were also some roster moves.
Well, that's why they brought Jalapio to the active 53 now. He's a backup center. And at the moment, with Richburg not even out on the field, he's in concussion protocol, I guess because of the sunlight. They don't even want him out there, you know, to give him headaches and stuff like that as they try to take care of him. Brett Jones now becomes the starting center. And Jalapio, who you remember was in training camp, he now becomes the backup center
right. As
he is active on the 53. And Deontay Skinner, the linebacker who was just brought in last week because they were thin at linebacker with injuries, he's now been taken off the 53 and waived to make room for Jalapio.
And they just added somebody, an offensive lineman, to the practice squad.
Yeah, Fabiano was added to the practice squad. I recall him at some point having a cameo appearance here during the offseason as well. At this point, I don't know that that's necessarily as relevant as Jalapio, because, quite frankly, last week when Richburg went out with the concussion and Brett Jones, who had the sore hip, had to come in and play center, I remember thinking to myself, well, what happens now if Brett Jones gets knocked out of this game? Who was the third-string center? They really didn't have one. Adam Geddes, if you remember, used to be the emergency center. He was the backup center. So was Mark Herzlich. He was the backup long snapper. Herzlich's on IR. Geddes is no longer on the 53. So where would the Giants go? I was talking to somebody before about it, and the assumption is that Justin Pugh would have probably had to go in and play center to finish up that game last week if Jones could not get through the fourth quarter.
Well, let's hope they move forward without any more. Again, we don't know what the situation is. Just because you tell me, just because Richburg isn't out there right now with the team doesn't mean it's bad or
it simply means he hasn't passed the independent concussion protocol.
Well, he's supposed to be resting anyway,
you know,
with that situation being what
sure.
it is. So,
but the problem with that though is there's no healing schedule for the protocol. You know, you have to go to the independent tester, and the league will tell you when he can actually go out and practice again. And so you can't put a timetable on it. It's simply whenever it happens. So it's impossible for any of us to say whether he has any chance at all of being available for the Chargers game or even the week after. We have no way to know.
All right, what do you say we open up the phone lines, though, right now? Let's go to stay in the area, stay in New York, and speak with Travis from Queens. Travis, how you doing today?
Hey, fellas, how you guys doing?
What's up, Travis?
Hi.
Ain't nothing. I want to make 2 points, one about the offensive line. It's a shame that it came to injuries, whereas McAdoo had to put this offensive line together. The whole point of bringing in DJ Fluka was to help in the run game, and did a great job Sunday. But they should have. That's what I was saying about preseason. They had all this time to figure out the best five to put out there, and they never even put this on, like, on the field whatsoever. That's crazy. So now we're in a position where we're at 0-4. On top of that, Pierre Paul, I remember a few months ago, you guys were stressing pay him. And, you know, he's not – I love him to death. He's a giant. But I was saying you pay Hankins instead of him. And this is my reason. He does not show up when you need him to. Like on third down and 8 and 7, he's always close. But close doesn't win games.
Who are you talking about now?
Jason Pierre-Paul.
He doesn't show up?
Yeah, like he's not doing anything right now.
You know what, Trav? I respectfully, I got to disagree with you. Listen, I'll be the first.
What did he do in a Buccaneers game?
Well, okay. He didn't have a good game. A lot of people didn't have a good game. The entire defense didn't have a good game. But to say... I mean, to say a guy like JPP doesn't show up, that to me, you know, listen, I appreciate the call and thank you, but that's kind of wacky to say that JPP doesn't show up. I mean, really, I think that's being unfair. You want Hankins instead of JPP? I'm sorry. Listen, he did not have a stellar game, like a lot of guys did not have a stellar game. Doesn't show up.
The caller actually contradicted himself because he said, oh, a lot of times he gets close. Well, guess what? Close actually does count because pressures and hurries against a quarterback do sometimes cause that quarterback to throw errant passes and even throw interceptions.
Right.
So there's a stat in the league. And by the way, JPP and Vernon were the most potent in terms of pressures on quarterbacks last year of any defensive end duo in the NFC. Now, did they have the most sacks of any duo? They did not. But in terms of hurries and pressures, yes, they did. And those are impactful. Those do matter.
I tell you, that's the first call I've ever heard. That's the first person I've ever heard say that JPP doesn't show up. I'm sorry.
I don't know where that's coming from.
I don't want to be disrespectful, but that's as wacky can be. Let's go to Shakes in Baltimore. Shakes, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on? Can y'all hear me quite well?
We can hear you quite well.
Shakes,
can you
how
hear
you
us quite well?
Yeah, I can hear y'all great. What's going on, P. Dot?
Long time, man. How you doing?
I'm fine, man. I'm good. With this team, I'm not, though. let me just say something real quick. And your name is Rush, right?
You got to...
All right, Russ, I agree with you. That is kind of wacky for him to come on here and say, oh, JPP isn't showing up, when there's a lot of other people you can point your finger at. So to point the finger at one of the best players that we do have and say, oh, he's the one that's why we're losing, come on, bro, stop that. And he's not the only one.
You know, Shakes, the funny thing is
misguide, point their fingers at somebody, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but
no, Shakes. The one thing I do want to say, I want to actually add to your point. I don't think that caller understood that Jason played like 95% of the defensive snaps last year. I mean,
they just want to point their fingers, man.
Right? How crazy is that to say that somebody doesn't show up when they basically couldn't tear him off the field with a Mack truck? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No problem. So. That's the wrong person to point your finger at. Now, the guy that just tried to point the finger at JPP? No. Who you need to point the finger at is the head coach, the guy in charge, calling these plays. Because the play calling is horrendous. It's terrible. It is horrible, okay?
Yeah.
It's terrible game time situations. It is. He just looks like he's inept on what he is doing. He doesn't know.
Well,
Shakes, he doesn't know.
Shakes, yeah? let me ask you this. First of all, Ben McAdoo has said, and if you've watched it, you know, any of the post games or comments from him, he has said it's on me. But that said, okay, you know, the coach has said there's plenty of blame to go around, starting with the coaching. Okay, I can buy, I certainly do understand you questioning some play calling. At the at the same time, you know what, when players don't execute, when receivers drop extremely catchable balls, that's a failure of execution. It's not the play calling that kills that. It's the failure to execute the play.
Okay. I hear you. I hear you, right? But here's my rebuttal, okay? It's not the player's fault when you get to third and one and you want to do pitch plays out of shotgun. It's not the player's fault when you get to the goal line and you go pass play on third down, then you go for it on fourth down and you do a run play. That's not the player's fault, okay? That's not the player's fault. To do inept things like that, that is not the player's fault. That is the head coach. And it's been doing, and it's been, last year, it kind of hit it. It kind of disguised it because we went 11-5. But his play calling has been inept since last year.
All right.
Well, thanks for the call, Shakes.
I want to make 2 points with Shakes here, because and he's a good caller. He's an educated fan, and I appreciate his. It's okay. We're cool.
Listen, Shakes, we're not trying to cut you off. We want to give everybody a chance, so don't misread that.
I know. Don't worry about it. Just to
paint a bigger picture here, Shakes. Ben McAdoo was offensive coordinator for 2 years, and Eli had two of the best 4 years of his career. Okay, and the Giants' offense was cooking. Now, what you can say, if you like, that the production, while he's worn both hats the past season and a quarter, has not been what it's supposed to be. But to say that he doesn't know how to call plays or doesn't know offenses would then discount the 2 years when he was offensive coordinator and Eli absolutely destroyed the rest of the league with his arm. So
yeah,
I think
I'm sorry to cut you off, but he wasn't in charge.
Yeah, but he did run the offense.
Oh, wait a minute. I see now Shakes is cutting you off.
Tom Coughlin had all say.
No. Shakes, trust me when I tell you. Tom gave McAdoo full authority over the offense, and the only thing that Tom had the ability to do, he listened to the plays coming in on the headset, and if he wanted to interject, he could then interject, which he did not do very often. So I think it's an unfair criticism to say that, you know, to paint a broad brush on McAdoo. I think what you can say is that while wearing both hats, he has not been as efficient or as effective in his play calling, perhaps, as he was earlier. But to say that he doesn't know what he's doing or he doesn't know offense, which I get from a lot of people, that's got to be inaccurate. It's got to be, because the offense was brilliant when he had the controls for the first 2 years of his assistant's residency here. So let me just say that to you. Now,
disagree.
All right. Well, I'm just laying out facts for you. Now, the other thing I'll say, and I want to make this very, very clear, while I think you could absolutely, in a number of instances, look at some of the play selection and say there are logical ways to go elsewhere. And I would be the first one to tell you that, too, because you know what I think about the power run game. And you know how I want to bash the ball inside the 5-yard line. And I don't like the video game spread offense. You and I get that. But here's the thing. Unfortunately, the lack of execution, as Russ has said, the drop passes. I mean, let's face it. You and I both know this. If Sterling Shepard holds on to that ball when he falls out of bounds, and that touchdown counts as a touchdown, nobody's questioning the play call. And you and I both know that. Now, I still would rather have powered it in with an extra offensive lineman and a jumbo package and rammed it right down the Eagles' throats.
Oh, so let me ask you a question on that. Since we're talking about this, Shakes, before we go on to somebody else. But seriously,
no problem.
Well, he's a good caller. That's why I want to hold him.
Without question, but here's the deal. You would like somebody to power it in, okay? Get that.
Right.
We all get
Absolutely.
That. We all would like somebody to power it in. Have they had trouble? They've had trouble getting a yard at times.
To do that, Russ, you need to run a jumbo package with the extra lineman, unbalanced line. There are things you can do to power it in.
Thank you, P. Dot. And that's my whole thing about McAdoo.
Okay.
He is inept.
Well, no, Shakes. That's not a fair word.
Shakes. And thank,
it is, man.
Buddy, thank you for the call, but really.
No problem, man. Thanks for taking
all
my
right,
call.
Shakes.
That's not
a fair word.
No, see, that's all I'm trying to say here. If you want to criticize somebody, and we've had a couple of calls here today, to say that JPP doesn't show up and to say that the coach is inept, you want to question play calling, you're entitled to, and it's understandable. We all get that. Inept, that word should not be used. I'm sorry.
It's not fair. It's not fair.
Whether we like it or not, you're right. It's not fair. You can be – we could be the Ben McAdoo Chamber of Commerce. If he deserves criticism, so be it. But to say inept – and your point is very well taken. You know, number one, like I said, failure to execute a play doesn't mean you're a bad play caller. It means somebody didn't execute the play. And as you very well pointed out, Eli was – you know, had two – bang-bang years under his tutorship as the offensive coordinator. So, inept? No. You want to criticize a play, that's fine. Let's go to Chris up in Syracuse. Chris, how are we doing today? You're on with Russ and Paulie Dotz.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to make a couple of quick points, and then I'll hop off. One, I wanted to just kind of go a little bit while I was just sitting here listening to think about. I think the criticism that I have with McAdoo is that his ability to put people in their best place to succeed. I think that that's what the players or what the fans are frustrated with. Play calling, I think he's made some good play calls, some questionable game time decisions and stuff like that. But when you know Flowers is struggling and you're not chipping and all the stuff that we've kind of talked about, I just think that he's too stubborn and too willing to go back into doing what it is that he wants to do rather than put the players in the best position to succeed at times. But moving on from that point, this game coming up I think is going to be pretty interesting because these two teams are very similar. They don't run the ball very well.
They're identical, actually. They really are.
Yeah, pretty much identical.
They really are.
And what makes it even crazier, you know, it's Rivers and, you know, they're tied at the hip.
Rivers and Eli,
Rivers and Eli. So that really makes it crazy, Chris.
Yeah, I would really like to see Eli at least get one win over Rivers just because he hasn't. Obviously, he's 0-3 against him in his career, and I'm hoping that obviously they could get the win. But it's crazy. We don't have a pick yet. Not one.
Yeah, Giants.
They have one.
Giants have zero interceptions, two fumble recoveries, and quite frankly, I think that that's also, and we always talk about turnovers come in bunches, but, you know, right now the Giants defense is not creating nearly enough opportunities for themselves, and that's part of their problem as well. I agree with you.
I agree, and I actually, as much as I love Spags and how great I think he is, I think that he deserves a little bit of the criticism, too. I don't think it should all go McAdoo's way. Why you got Eli Apple out on an island with Mike Evans on Sunday, it's just, you know, I'm like, whoa. Because you know that he's struggling right now, and they're going to keep on going after him, and that's exactly what they did, and he gave up another touchdown. And granted, I'm not a defensive coordinator, but I'm just saying it seems like pretty – sometimes it's like almost too obvious, you know what I mean? So I hope that they go ahead, obviously get the win, start turning the ball over, and get the thing turned around. But, hey, who the hell would have thought that Eli would be leading the team in rushing touchdowns after 4 weeks?
Oh, my goodness.
So, all right, guys, thanks for taking my call.
That's
Thank you.
Hey, you know, we haven't even touched on that. How about Eli going, taking it in?
You know, Russ, I've been talking to him about this for about 10 years now. I've been saying, Eli, do you know how many times every defender on the field literally turns his back on you because they know you're not going to run the ball? And there are times when there's got to be 15, 20 yards of open field in front of you, and you don't take it. I've been begging him, and I'm Mind you, I don't like running quarterbacks, guys. You know that. I don't, especially because they get hurt. I'm not a big fan.
Especially when this quarterback, because we can't afford that.
There However, there are times, and this was one, where you got to take that gaping hole and use it to your advantage. And he did. And I'm so glad that he did. Although, did you see that horrible attempt at a slide once again?
As Parcells used to tell us,
I mean,
he's not exactly Baryshnikov.
Oh, man. You know, I got to wonder if he ever even played like sandlot baseball as a kid.
Right.
Because he has the worst sliding technique in the history of the universe.
Well, he does what baseball players do now. He doesn't slide it. He goes
head first. Shoulder first.
Yeah, he goes shoulder
first. It's not even head first. Yeah, it's shoulder first.
As long as it's on the left shoulder, the right shoulder, we had to have something to worry about. Let's go to Will deep in the heart of Texas. Will, how you doing today?
Fellas, how y'all doing?
Hello.
How you doing, Will?
I'm doing all right. P Dot.
Yes, sir.
I'm gonna take a play from your call off.
Okay.
I think in the first half, McAdoo is playing video game football. Like they're just playing, picking plays and running them. There's no adjustments until the second half, but it's all about execution. Now, the second half, especially in this last game, that offensive lineup. I love the lineup, and I am officially on the Wayne Gillum bandwagon. I am on the bandwagon. He is the guy.
Wayne Gallman.
Yeah, you like him.
Now,
okay.
Yeah, I'm on the bandwagon. Now here's my the heart of my comment, and I'll take your answers off the air. Eli Apple, I don't know if he lost his confidence, but it's like he's out there. And he's in no man's land. Like, he just blanks out. And I don't know if Spags is trying to get him to build his confidence, but he's not giving him any help. Like, he is the Achilles heel of the defense. And everybody say, well, it's personnel. You got your personnel. If you're not producing on the practice field, you're not going to get in the game. Well, why do we have this personnel? If they're not producing and practicing, why are they on the team?
Well, let me ask you this.
They let Dane Smith go too, and I'll tell you comments off there.
All right, Will. All right. Thank you very much, buddy.
Russ, I love that everybody wants to try to find someone to point a finger at, but
what happens with 0-4 teams,
right?
And you know that, and then they know that.
There are so many holes in the dam right now that to single out one guy is almost just kind of wacky, to take one of your terms, because who busted the coverage on O.J. Howard? When he literally had no one within 20 yards of him. And Jameis Winston just sat back there and lofted him the pass. And the entire stadium was watching as O.J. Howard ran all by himself down the left sideline for like a 60-something or 70-yard touchdown. I mean, you know, why don't we talk about the mental error that a particular player may have made to bust that coverage to give them a free touchdown? Instead, people want to come after Eli Apple, who is trying his best, who is attempting to stay with the receiver and cover the receiver. And by the way, Mike Evans is a very, very good receiver. Is it any crime that Mike Evans beat him for a touchdown catch? He's done that to a bunch of people in this league.
No, I in fairness, the previous caller, Will, we're talking about a situation with Eli. Eli Apple has certainly had his problems. The first
he was better last year. This year he seems to be missing something, and I agree with that.
Well, to me, what's been missing more than anything is this past week was something else, but what had been missing more than anything is he's running toe-to-toe. He's got the guy covered, and then he loses sight of the ball, where the ball is. To me, that has been the biggest problem. I'd just like to make one other point. Will was talking about, you know, the just calling plays, running through the – pretty much, I'm paraphrasing, running through the motions. It was on the Giants, their third possession.
Okay.
They started off at the 25. It was after their TD, after the Bucs went up 7-0. Perkins runs for 15 yards. And was it a play or two plays later? I think it was 2nd-and-8 from the 40 or 41. Eli goes deep to Marshall down the left side and put it in the breadbasket, and instead of Brandon reaching for it. So, again, that's another situation with execution. If players are executing, which they're really not doing in the first quarter for sure, that becomes a major problem. You can't put that all on the coach. And that was – listen, we've been talking about that. Brandon knows. Whatever the reason is, I don't know if it's a lack of confidence because maybe he's trying too hard. But Brandon would be the first one to tell you. He was telling everybody yesterday, you know, he doesn't want to dwell on it, which I get because you do have to move forward. Mm-hmm. You better have a short memory. But it's got to be corrected.
Well, you know, there's no question that Eli Manning, and let's see, my count, Russ, I have 14 drops by Giants players this year on Eli Manning through four games. 14 drops, 5 by Marshall, 5 by Beckham, 3 by Ingram, 1 by Shepard. And that's my grading. That's not the coaches. The coaches may have a different number, but I try to look at my eyes and see what I see. That's a lot. And I don't even want to think about how many of those would have changed the games.
Well, now, I agree with you. Odell's, but when you look at Odell, I'll give you an example. You look at Odell's drop, and you look at, most of Odell's drops are, it's not an excuse. He's trying to do too much too soon.
Still got to grab the ball.
No, you have to grab the ball, right. And, well, the point is he's running before he's got the ball. Brandon, now, in fairness to Brandon, David Deal and I spoke about this yesterday.
Okay.
He made one big time.
He sure did.
Big time, tremendous catch.
Sure did.
Which subsequently led, it was on a third down play, subsequently led it to the Gallman touchdown. But that's been a discussion to me all thus far into the four games. He's a big guy. I mean, that's what everybody was excited about. Brandon Marshall is this big guy. He's not snatching the ball. He's letting it come to him in too many circumstances. No. We saw that happen in the Lions game. And you know, to his credit, he stood outside and looked at everybody. He stood at his locker and said, "It's on me." It's
no, he's absolutely taking responsibility for all of the miscues. At the same time, it is still surprising because this is a guy who's been to, what, 6 Pro Bowls?
It's very surprising.
12 years in the league or whatever it is now. And
I believe he's just trying too hard. I really do.
Well,
and I think it's in his
head.
I think
there's a bunch of guys who are trying too hard.
Well, 0-4 does that to you.
Yeah, you press. You press.
You know, they can say they're not pressing, but, you know.
They are.
You've heard me say it time and time again. And coaches are going to tell you the same thing. Winning builds confidence. If that's the case, then losing works in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Let's go. Is this Jason from Denmark? Is that Denmark, Denmark?
Yeah, this is Denmark, Denmark.
All right, Jason.
Hello.
How are you, buddy?
What time is it there?
It is 6:27 in the afternoon.
All right. Okay. How you doing, Jason?
So you can tell what kind of season I'm having because I have to wake up like 2:00 in the morning to see a game.
Oh
and
my!
It doesn't go the way we want it to go. You know, I'm like really, really, really bummed out at 6:00 in the morning.
Wow.
What can we do for you?
Well, we're glad for your interest. It's certainly nice to hear.
Oh, I've been on the show before, talked to you a lot of times when I was out in California.
California is not Denmark, buddy.
Okay, well,
what do you got,
what can we do for you?
I actually have a question and great segue to what you were just talking about with Brandon Marshall. Is it thinking too much like video game football if we were to look at what worked for Brandon Marshall in the past on other teams and try to incorporate that in the plays with him, seeing that we only have him for 2 years, seeing that he is trying to get to the playoff, make a small accommodation to what worked for him on other teams and try to incorporate that in our playbook so that he has more success?
That is
that's
a really...
like video game football.
Yeah, that's a very interesting angle on this. I was talking to Bob Papa about this the other day, and I said, you know what I would like to see done? I'd like to dust off some of Eli's old plays that he used to throw to Plexico Burris. Because Marshall and Burris are very similar in style, in size, in frame, in capability. And we know how great Eli and Plex used to hook up all the time. So my thought was, why aren't we seeing some of those Plexico plays? Let's dust some of those off, and I think that would be really cool. And Bobby was like, I don't know. He's like, maybe, maybe not. But you make a good point. We haven't seen many of those plays run by Brandon Marshall. So you come up with another angle, and maybe they should dust off some of Marshall's plays from the past when he was an All-Pro. That's another very interesting way to look at it.
I don't think, Jason, yeah. And maybe I'm going to disagree a little bit here. For whatever reason, I just think it's a confidence situation with him right now. I don't know why, but it's been that way from the get-go. No, let me just finish my point. I just think it's not the plays to him because the ball's there. He's dropping them.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting, though?
Believe me, I understand your point, Russ, but I also think that where you lack confidence, you go back to what you know. So if it's a confidence thing, if you give him what he knows, maybe that'll build his confidence a little bit more, too.
You know what's interesting? We have heard Coach as well as Brandon himself and even Eli talk about how it's different when every quarterback delivers you a ball. They throw the ball differently, different speeds,
true.
Different rotations. They put it in different places. Look, he could run a square out, and I could throw it to him and hit him right here, chest high. And maybe, you know, Bob Papa decides he's going to come and throw him a square out, but instead he's hitting him at the belly button. Well, guess what? That 4-inch difference in where the ball is going to land does have an impact on the receiver. And so I've heard a lot about how their chemistry is growing, their chemistry is developing, their timing is developing. They're slowly working things out to where they're supposed to be all in unison like butter, you know, where it's nice and smooth. But to this point, it hasn't. And I wonder if that's not part of this confidence issue that you're talking about. Because to me, if you keep thinking about that every time you go out and you run a route, that's going to hinder your chances of completing the pass. That's my opinion.
Cool.
Yeah.
Go
ahead,
Jason. Thanks, guys. I'll keep listening to the show, and I'll try to return to the show. I've just been working during the time that the show is on.
Thanks for sticking with us.
All right, Jason. Appreciate you
be
calling
well.
From Denmark. Stay safe, buddy.
There might be something to that, Russ.
I do understand what you're saying. I just think, believe me, like I say, he made a spectacular catch. And it was a catch with money on a table that had to be done. I'm just finding – this is the NFL.
Yeah.
This is not high school. It's not college. This is the NFL, and we're talking about – who we're talking about here? We're talking about an all-pro receiver. And I don't think for a second that Brandon Marshall has lost it. Not for a second. I just genuinely believe it's a confidence thing because – and as you said, a lot of – it got with a lot of guys, it's confidence. But in particular with Brandon, I've watched balls – that were like, you know, right there. And he just dropped them. And I don't get it.
All right. Sporting Charts had Brandon Marshall dropping 8 passes last year on 59 receptions. Okay. I don't have the numbers for every single season of Brandon Marshall's career. In fact, I don't even know if they exist on the web. There are some sites unofficially, remember, drops are kind of subjective, that will go back 3, 4, 5 years. It is true that Brandon Marshall has a reputation of making the tough catch and dropping the easy one. This is something that's kind of plagued him throughout his career and been a blemish, if you will, on his stat sheet. Does that excuse what has happened in the first month? It doesn't excuse it.
Especially when you're 0-4.
Doesn't excuse it, you know, but...
It's magnified.
It's magnified. But, you know... This is not something that's coming out of left field now. He has had some dropsies in his career, and Jets fans will tell you that.
Well, to your point, he made the tremendous catch, which led to the Gallman, a play or two plays later, led to the Gallman touchdown. But he dropped one that I say in the breadbasket, or the LaBonza, as they might say. Anyway, let's go to Mike in Fort Myers. Mike, you're on with Russ and Paulie Dotz. How you doing?
Hey, very good. A lot of the things that I was going to bring up, people have discussed, but I'll pick up this last thing on Marshall, because I've got family in Chicago, Cubby fans, and what you guys have been saying about him you know, making a great catch and then dropping the easy one is absolutely true. I mean, he had Cutler throwing to him for a few years and some other quarterbacks. So he's known for dropping ones that he should catch. And the story that my son said to me is that he has a tendency, he, Marshall, to bring the ball into his body. And I think, I can't remember the gentleman here in the red shirt next to Paulie, but I think he was saying that he's catching it in his breadbasket. He's not going out and getting it. And I think you're absolutely true.
That's me, Mike. I'm Russ. But, yeah, no, I've seen it a couple of times, and I don't understand it. That's what's confusing. But to Paulie Dott's point.
My family has seen it for years in the Bears, okay?
Right.
And that he makes a great one, and then he fluffs an easy one, and that he does have a tendency to catch it in the body. And my son said to me, hey, watch, if there's like two defenders near him, he's going to take it in the body. He doesn't want to get hit in the ribs. Now, that's my son's observation, whether or not it's true or not. Who knows? I mean, you got guys coming at you, you know, like a bullet. So I don't blame him for protecting his ribs. But anyway, that was the observation. The other one that I wanted to pick up, guys, and Shakes, I like Shakes. I listen to him. I think I know what he's talking about with JPP. He'd like to see JPP not just get the hurries. He'd like to see JPP get the sacks. And, you know, that's maybe, in my view, an issue that we're not getting pressure up the middle. That Hankins did get a little bit of pressure, and I think they're double-teaming JPP a lot. St. Vernon seems to be handled by the offensive left tackle.
Well,
Mike,
excuse me for interrupting. Just remember one thing. This past game, OV was playing on a bum ankle, and subsequently he had to leave the game.
I know. I get that. But that means that if I'm the other team, I'm going to concentrate on JPP and make sure that he doesn't get in on my quarterback.
Sure.
But going back to some questions before, we're talking about the offensive system and folks wondering whether or not McAdoo makes adjustment or whether or not his system matches Eli's skills. And I think Paulie said, well, wait a second, you know, Eli had two great years with him. But under a different system, Eli has won Super Bowls. So I don't know if McAdoo's system really matches Eli's set of skills the way we'd like it to. I'm wondering whether or not McAdoo he learned at the hand of a great coach, McCarthy. I'm wondering if he thinks that Eli is going to run like Rodgers. I mean, we all laughed at Eli's longest run of his career last week. But I'm just wondering if he's matching it up the same way.
I don't listen. I think he knows. He knows what Eli's not winning any dance contest, Mike, he knows the difference between Aaron Rodgers and Eli for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Eli runs like the Budweiser, you know, horses, but not
Clydesdales.
Yeah, Clydesdale. or like with a piano on his back. That's fair.
Hey, you know, you were talking about defensive backs, guys, and I offer this up in that Apple, when he came out, even though he only played 1 year at Ohio State, the book on him was that he was a grabber. And I think what's happened to him now is that the officials are getting after him for grabbing and holding, and that may be affecting his game. Plus, he's not turning. I don't know how I would turn. I just don't know. I mean, the game happens so fast. But he doesn't seem to have a sense of timing or that he's looking at the offensive player for any clues. And I don't know how you improve that. I simply don't know.
Well, I think, Mike, and thank you for the call, buddy. Appreciate it.
Okay.
I think the biggest problem, Mike, is that he's, from what I've seen, he's just, I mean, he's running toe-to-toe with these guys. You and I were sitting next to each other, and he doesn't turn around at the right time.
There are, you know, I wish we had some even high school or college coaches who would call up and kind of explain this. There are two ways to coach a cornerback in football. One is you play the ball first, and that's your priority, dealing with the ball and the quarterback and the way it's coming in. The other way is you play the man first and then you play the ball second. I prefer myself to play the man first and the ball second. That would be my style, my preference. It doesn't mean it's right. It just means it's one of the two ways that coaches coach the position. Eli right now is doing a really good job of playing the man first. But then when it comes time to make the play on the ball, he's not finishing. Either he's not turning his head properly, he's not getting his hands up on the ball properly, he's not finishing off what he's supposed to be doing. If you're going to play the man first, that's fine. Again, it's a very acceptable way of playing the position. But you'll see other corners who are strictly, they're like ball hawk corners. I'll give you a great example. Deion Sanders, one of the greatest cover corners in the history of football. He was a ball first corner, not a man first corner. So there are two ways to play it. You're allowed to play it either way you like, but you just better make sure that you finish the play all the way through. Eli reminds me so much of Will Allen, who always was in position and then didn't finish the play.
That's a good comparison.
That's what he's looking like right now. Well, this year he's Will Allen.
Not last year.
Last year he was much better.
Yeah.
This year he's frustrating the heck out of me.
Yeah.
Because Will Allen could cover. He just wouldn't finish the play.
All right. Let's go more local than Denmark. Let's go to Brooklyn and catch up with Jay. Jay, how you doing today?
Hey, how you doing, Russ and Paul, man?
Hi.
Where in Brooklyn? How you doing, man? Where in Brooklyn, Jay?
Williamsburg.
Okay, buddy.
You know, I like to think of myself as an old school guy like you guys.
Okay.
You know, Giants, 4 Super Bowls. You know, I hold them up there. You know, they're one of the premier franchises, you think. You know, like the Steelers.
Right.
You know, the Packers, everything like that. So that's why I have this organizational question more of an overview from you two guys. You guys know a lot more football than I do. Since they've won in 2011, they've done a lot of losing. You know, there's been a lot of seasons where, I mean, look, Giants fans are surprised by this 0-4 start, right? If you look over the last 6 years, they've lost a lot, guys, and they've had streaks of 6 losses in a row. They started off a season with 6 losses. They ended the season losing 6 out of 7. They had another season where they had 7 in a row in the middle of the season.
6 in a row, let's be fair. Go ahead.
No, it was 7. If you look it up, it was 7 in a row in the middle of the season one of the years. They started off 0-6. It was another year they had 7 in a row, and another year they finished 6 out of 7 losing.
Listen to me. I have the unenviable position of having to do the post-game shows here when it's pretty tough, my friend Jay. It's pretty tough. I don't know if you were watching them to do a post-game show when you start off the season at 0-6, but
you know, I agree with you. But be that as it may, regardless of what they've done, we think of them as like this perennial contender. And over the last 6 years, they've done a lot of losing. And it's like, you know, you don't see these other teams take these dips like this. They'll take a dip a year or two, but they've been in this. You know, let's assume they're not going to make the playoffs this year. Even if they go 8-8, I'll sign for that right now, because that's a big finish. But let's assume they don't make the playoffs. That's 5 out of the last 6 years, no playoffs. With a franchise quarterback, with the same GM, with pretty much the same coaching staff, because he went from offensive coordinator to head coach, that's a little concerning. I just wanted to know what you guys thought and what was the reason for that.
Well, Jay, you know, first off, a guy lost his job last year because of the losing.
Right, but I mean, they didn't clean house. He just promoted another guy from within the organization.
Well, okay, let's hold on a second. All right, by the way, I stand corrected. You were right. After the misery of that 0-6 start, it was a 7-game losing streak the following season.
That's a lot. I mean, guys, that's a lot.
Okay,
losing streak.
But hear me out a second. You're saying they didn't clean house. A guy lost his job. Tom Coughlin lost his job. Ben McAdoo took over. They brought in they completely rebuilt the defense, and it all worked like a charm last year.
Right, but that's the thing, though, Russ. Last year is the anomaly in this thing. You know, we're talking like,
yeah, but they made,
you know, 11
but,
to 5
but,
has been the thing.
But Jay,
last year, but Jay, has they been made, the anomaly. The usual has been the 0-4, the 0-6, the 6-10. That's what I'm trying to say.
But they made the correction, and the correction worked. You know, if they didn't make a correction and it didn't work, and I don't think – I bet you weren't complaining last year, Jay, about how the team was performing. And
oh, no, not at all. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying anyone should be fired. I'm not saying anyone – that's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is from your guys' experience, from you, what you've watched over football all these years, mm-hmm. all right, whatever you say that was fixed last year is not fixed now. So they're right back to where they were 2 years ago.
Oh, it's broken now. I would not it's got to be fixed immediately starting Sunday.
What I'm saying is, from your opinion, why has this team been in this muck for this last 6 years? They've been stuck in this muck. Do you know why?
Well, and Jay, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
I would say, you know, first of all, the Giants organization is an organization, you know this, of – quote-unquote, great stability.
Consistency is a big part of what they do here.
Consistency, stability. They don't go irrational. And let's be frank. You win a couple of Super Bowls, that's got a lot, you know, you have a lot of goodwill equity built up in that. It does not last forever. And it cost Tom Coughlin a job. It did. Did it not?
No. Hey, you know what, Russ? The way I look at it, I mean, Tom had a heck of a run here.
Without question.
And quite honestly, you know, for a guy to be a head coach of a National Football League team in this era for a decade is actually on the high end. Most guys don't make it a decade.
Not just a decade, but a decade in the National Football League, excuse me, and a decade doing it in New York City.
Yeah.
Where the bright lights and the stove, the burners are on your butt.
Yeah.
You know, 24/7. So I understand certainly what you were saying, Jay. I just think it's a situation. You're pointing to a situation. It cost somebody a job. They rebuilt it last year. This team, and that's the hallmark of the team, they don't just fire people for the sake of firing people.
They
don't make changes just for the sake of making a change. Now, believe you me, if this doesn't get corrected – this season, you know, something's going to happen. But it's four games in, and believe me, everybody knows the collar, you know, it's getting real tight. Well, I mean, the heat is on.
One of the things that bothers me about when people talk of the Super Bowl teams, and they go back to the first one, really, because they say, okay, well, since that time, the Giants have the one Super Bowl and only three playoff appearances. I look at Tom Coughlin had a 9-7 team that didn't make the playoffs, a 10-6 team that didn't make the playoffs. It wasn't like they were 2-14. You know, look, folks, if you're a longtime Giants fan and you remember the days of Gary Wood being quarterback, if you remember even the days of Joe Pisarcik in more recent vintage of being quarterback, you know, if you remember Randy Johnson, if you remember Craig Morton.
Don't forget Tom Kennedy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, seriously,
yeah.
You remember the Yale Bowl, and you remember playing at Shea Stadium in 1975. You know, I guess what I'm trying to say is, even some of the down periods of the last decade, some of the down years, they were not nearly as dreadful as some of those teams of the 60s and of the 70s and even, you know, a little bit of the early 80s. I mean, Bill Parcells' first year, 3-12-1.
A lot of people were calling – nobody was saying Bill's the greatest coach at 3-12-1.
I mean, here – I guess what I'm saying is, think of this as a Giants fan. When some of your low bar years are 6-10, there were franchises that have gone 2-14. That have gone, you know, had that on more than one occasion. So I think there's a lot of spoiling going on here, because usually when the Giants are not going well, they're usually not in the muck. You know, they're below sea level. They're taking on water. Maybe they're having a bad season. Certainly they've had a number of those recently. But they're usually not at the bottom of the barrel. And I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, Russ, we've been around this franchise now. I've been around it for 35 years, and they've made the playoffs half of those years. So that spoils me as a media guy, knowing that I'm covering a team that's got a 50% chance every year going in of being a playoff team.
Well listen.
Been to five Super Bowls. Really.
A lot of guys cover teams, and it's not just Super Bowls. If you're in our business, you're covering a team, you're covering a World Series, you're covering a baseball team or a hockey team or baskets. you know, to be able to go to the playoffs on a frequent basis, and then grant you, it hasn't been so frequent the past few years, but to go to get that, you know, the guys that never get to do that. So if you're asking us from that position, listen, everybody's frustrated about 0-4. Everybody, fans, media, organization. When I say organizations, players, ownership, the equipment people, the people who the lady who works in the kitchen. Everybody is. That's what happens. 0-4 does that. It makes you nuts.
Sure it does.
It literally does. It makes you nuts. Everybody would like to walk in on a Monday morning feeling good. This building is not the same on a Monday morning. It has not been the same for the first month of the season. You walk in, the only thing that's been the same is everybody's had a, you know, a dour, sour puss on. Really?
It is what it is.
Robin in Atlanta. Rob, how you doing today?
All right, how you guys doing?
Good. What's up, Robin?
Yeah, I wanted to touch. You guys actually touched about it earlier about Eli Apple actually playing the ball. A lot of times I don't see him here playing the ball. He always, like, falling down when he's trying to run behind the receiver and stuff. And I'll give you a perfect example of, like, playing the ball. On a fourth down we had, I think it was Leonard Collins that made a big play. That he was actually, I think a receiver was coming across the field. And he knew that he was... It was a fourth down. If he catches the ball, it's going to be a first down.
Yeah, I know the play you're talking about.
The best thing for him to do was to play the ball and hit the ball down. And that's what I kind of mean by, you know, playing the ball. A lot of times he's not playing the ball, and he's not even looking back at the ball.
Well, again, he's playing the man first, which is an acceptable technique. Now, what he's got to be able to do at the end of the play, when the ball comes in the vicinity of the target, now he's got to attack the ball. Now he's got to be able to turn his head and then make a play on the ball. That's where he's been insufficient this season. No one's going to argue that. But let me ask you something. I don't know how many years of Giants football you've watched, but there were some years where they had corners who wouldn't be within 2.5-3 yards of the receiver when the ball was thrown. Okay? This kid has coverage skills. He's a talented player. Now, right now, it may be a lack of confidence. It may be that he's second-guessing himself, and that's why he's not finishing plays. Because the first thing you want from a corner is you want him to shadow that guy. You want him on that receiver.
Eli Apple's not there.
He's not getting fried.
Go ahead, Rob.
I'm not saying he's not talented or anything. He's a good player. I like the way he plays, but, you know, just a little... The little things, like little technique things or something, you know, that he can...
He's got to clean some stuff up. There's no question. He's not playing great right now. No doubt about it.
I got one more play, too, on the sack on JPP and I think it was DRC.
Yeah, they shared a sack, I believe, on the stats.
Right.
Yeah, it's... Did the ball come out right before he actually hit the ground?
Good question. You think there should have been a fumble there?
I was looking back on the play, and I think that ball actually came out. So I was wondering, like, sometimes people don't kind of review, because we actually had some players around here that, you know.
I'll take a look at it. While Russ takes the next call, I'll look at it. You think that ball popped out?
Thanks, Robin. Appreciate
it. Thank you, guys.
I don't recall that. I remember the sack.
I remember the sack. I don't think it popped out, but I'm going to look for it.
I don't remember that being an issue either. Let's go to Maryland and speak with our friend Len. Len, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. What's going on, Len?
Yeah. As you both know, long time season to get older. You know, the only two times in my life, and I'm getting older, guys, but the only two times in my life when I've really been terribly disappointed with the Giants, I mean, to the point where I'm just not going anymore. Paul, you'll remember this.
Mm-hmm.
The day they traded Sam Huff.
Understood.
And secondly, if they had made me go to the Yale Bowl one more year,
parking on people's lawns and in their backyards.
I think Wellington. Enough of Wellington's friends said to him, "Well, we can't do that anymore." That he quit. That we fit in that year at Shea. I think his friends told him we can't go back. Those are the only two times. Look, let me tell you, I'm not a legacy guy. I've been to two Super Bowls. I'm happy to say they won both of them. Been to two Super Bowls. I'm not a legacy guy. I'm more of what have you done for me lately kind of guy.
Right.
I mean, I respect the fact that we won, you know, the Super Bowls. I'm honored to say that I'm a Giants fan. I've been to the Legacy Club. It's great, you know. It's good. But I'm not a Legacy guy. I'm more of, you know, what are you going to do for me tomorrow? What have you done for me lately, and so forth.
Okay.
A couple of you don't have to answer these questions. This is really more for the off season, maybe immediate off season, assuming we don't make the playoffs. I think there's probably 10 franchises. I haven't counted them up. 10 franchises that have been to one or fewer playoffs in the last 6 years. All right? And the Giants would be one of those teams. If we don't make it this year, it would be one out of six. There are some that haven't gone at all. I think in total, there's probably about 10.
And?
Here's the two questions. How many of those teams have the same head coach? Nobody.
Len, without going through the list, I don't know. If you're asking hypotheticals, I can't help you on that.
Okay. How many have the same general manager?
One.
Just one. All right, let me go to another point. Just kind of mull that over in your mind. Okay? I understand the loyalty from the Mara family. Most small businesses are that way, by the way. Not small businesses. Most family-owned businesses are that way.
All right.
You hire people you know. You don't go out in the street, find a guy, put an ad in the newspaper, and hire a guy to be run the front office or be your coach or whatever. I mean, you develop a relationship with the person. You got to know the person. That's how family businesses run.
Okay, but Len,
and
I'm
that's
asking,
how the, and that's
what,
how the Giants have been run.
But what's
I'm
your
not knocking it. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying that's it.
Well, listen. In fairness, you're saying what has been the same, and thanks for the call, Len, as always. We know you're a long – listen, when you can spit out Sam Huff, we know what kind of fan you are and what fan you've been. But listen, there was a major change 2 years ago, as we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. Somebody lost a job. So it works two ways. You know, some people like – I'll give you an example of change in baseball. You know, let him rest in peace. And I had a wonderful relationship with Yankees, George Steinbrenner. But believe me, George was criticized time and time again for good money, spending good money after bad money, and one change after another, and Billy Martin a gazillion times, and changing managers like you and I change our socks and our underwear. As soon as you win, then everybody likes the stability because then it's keeping stability. And it's the same thing in all sports.
Well, how many World Series have the Yankees won in the last 6 years? Cashman's still the GM, right?
You know, stability counts for an awful, awful lot. Listen, let's be frank. Fans, let's even take it one step further. Not just fans, the media. People get spoiled.
Mm-hmm. Sure we
you
do.
Set
we
the bar, and you expect everything. And you know what? That goes within the organization. The bar is set.
I want to go back to that caller. He's right. The ball came out.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, 3rd and 10 from the Buccaneers 20. 4:03 left in the third quarter. Giants are up 17-16, and I'm watching this replay, and I have to tell you, I've watched it now in slow motion about 6 times. It's really, really close, okay? It is really, really close, but as DRC and JPP converge on Winston, and he goes back to throw at his own 10, okay, they combine to hit him, and the ball pops out just before his knee hits the ground. Just before his knee hits the ground, the ball pops out.
But
holy smokes.
It looks like one of those questions about being conclusive or not being conclusive.
It would have been really – they would have had to have blown up the video.
Well, that's – so you just –
which they can do.
Yeah, but you just answered your own question there.
It's close. It's really close. But I'll tell you what, holy smokes. That might have changed the – Giants get the ball to 10-yard line with a 17-16 lead. Does that change the game?
You know what, Paulie?
I know.
No, but this –
thanks for pointing that out, by the way.
This is what we do, what people do when you're 0-4.
Yeah, no doubt.
You're grasping at anything you can try and grab a hold of.
At real speed, it looks like his knee hits the ground, the ball pops out at the same time, and it looks like a clean play the way it was called at real speed. And when I rewatched the game, that's what I saw. I didn't think it was a question. So the caller raises the issue. I'm looking at it now in step-by-step slow motion, and you could probably make a case for that being a fumble. But right. Anyway, thank you for alerting us.
Nick in the Meadowlands. Nick, you've been hanging on. We don't have a lot of time, but we'll end it with you, buddy.
How you doing, Russ?
Good. What's going on, pal?
What's up, Paulie Dutch?
Hi.
Hey. Yeah, it was a fumble, man, and that's too bad, you know. That's Murphy.
It's really close. It might have been ruled inconclusive. I don't know what New York would have said had they gotten a chance to look at it, but it certainly looks like you'd want to take another glance. Let's put it that way.
What do you got for us today,
Nick? Whenever we sit there and we look at it like I did and like you just did, then you know, but they don't, you know, quick glance, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It was too quick. But with what a lot of people are saying, you know, the only thing with McAdoo, really, I just don't like him, you know, 2 weeks in a row not getting the points, you know, 4th and 4. I know why he did it, you know, in his own mind, but I just get the points, you know what I mean? Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, like me and Russ were talking about yesterday, you know, good players making bad plays, you know, Paulie.
Failure
to
execute.
People dropping, and on the defense, you know, hey, they've gotten there almost, you know, real close. But this week they ain't got a guy that's going to be moving around, and pocket awareness isn't as good as, you know, other guys that can start taking off and scrambling and making plays happen, you know.
Nick, you remember the old remember the first coach of the Tampa, since we're talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game, remember the first coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, John McKay? From USC, when he was asked, since we're talking about failure to execute, when he was asked at a press conference, what do you think about your offense's execution? And he said, I'm all for it, meaning to execute the offense.
And with the offense, you know, they were, you know, a couple years ago, they were rolling, and we needed a defense, you know.
Yeah.
It's just this year, now look what it's like, flip-flop. But you know what? It kept us in the first two games close. So all that needs to happen now, and you guys know it as much as I do, you know what kind of players you have on defense. You see what the offense is doing. They need to start clicking and meshing. And if that happens, then things will be good. We know we have good players here. It's just they got to do it all together. It's all got to be a team effort.
And
you know? You can't miss field goals. You can't, you know, punt it 15 yards. You know,
I
like
know.
We were saying yesterday, Russ, all kinds of things. They got to, you know, keep the penalties down like they did. And they got to get a win, you know, one play at a time, 1 yard at a time, 1 quarter at a time, get the win and move on from there.
Nick, when you say all together, the word is harmony. Everybody, they have to play in harmony. They have to perform in harmony. And maybe if they do that, pun the pun, we'll be singing a different tune this coming Monday.
And like I said with Brandon Marshall, if he catches 75% of his passes – that are thrown to him, then it'll be a lot better, won't it? Instead of 50%, you know, dropping of his throw.
As always, Nick.
He knows.
Thanks,
he knows.
Thanks for the call, Nick.
Thank
always
you.
A
right,
pleasure,
fellas.
Buddy. Thank you. Listen, what I said before, I mean, it affects everybody. When you're winning, everybody gets spoiled. The fans expect it. The media expects it. Maybe the media might expect it more than anybody. Well, because how can you make that mistake? And I've seen some of the criticism. You know, I've seen the criticism, and I spoke about it yesterday, Paul. I've seen the criticism coming, from the – listen, I had it out. Both. Season previews from the News and the Post. Everybody had them, Giants making the playoffs at 10-6.
That's so, what I had.
In fact, one of them in the news, they had the Giants beating, it was Eli beating Tom Brady for a third time in the Super Bowl. So, listen, if you're going to tell me going into this season, if you would have said going into this season, listen, I don't like what's been done in the offseason. I don't like the acquisition of this guy. I don't like the signing of this free agent. It's all bad. And then when this happens at 0-4, you can say, I told you so. But when you're picking them to go to a Super Bowl and winning it, or you're picking them to be a playoff team, you know, that's not a first guess now. That becomes a big-time second guess. So you were happy with everything that was being done, or pretty much, you know – on par with everything that was being done in the offseason.
Right.
Can't have it both ways. That's not just – that's the media. That's the fans. That's everybody. Can't have it both ways. Got to be fair about it, and you got to be honest about it.
Agreed.
You know, it's just one of those situations where it is what it is. But having said that, we'll call that a wrap on today. Thank you for being part of Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. As always, the number is 201-939-4513. Hashtag on Twitter, on Twitter is hashtag Giants Chat.
Yep.
For Paul Dottino, Paulie Dotz, I'm Russ Salzberg. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.